Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew.
Today we have Heather Long and Mike Dills. They are co-owners of Elite Production Services in the Baltimore, D.C. area. Welcome to the show. And so welcome to the show, Heather and Mike. It's good to see you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So I want you to introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and a little bit about what you do. Let's start with Heather.
Sure. Great. Thanks. I'm Heather. I'm the creative director for Elite Production Services. We are a husband and wife team, which surprises people sometimes, but we work really well together. It's a yin and yang situation where I'm on the creative side, where I handle a lot of the script writing and producing and creative content development, where Mike is really great with the technical side of things. And so it's just a really great balance for us. I have more years than I care to say right now in the live event industry. So been doing it, worked my way up from a graphic op position where I was running graphics backstage to managing multiple breakouts to going into more creative direction, show calling when we were in the live event spectrum, and now moving and transitioning more into that virtual world with creative direction and content development, and still calling shows, but it's just a very different way of calling shows. So that's a little bit of a background of me. I'll pass it off to my husband, who is below me right now. Oh. It's kind of funny in this view.
Well, like Heather said, I'm the technical director among many other hats we all wear at a small company. We decided that when we met, it was a good fit to do our own production company and do things the way we wanted to do and give more custom relationships with clients and that care and attention that we felt we couldn't do with, for me in particular, working for other large production companies. I do think that, I mean, we're in our studio now, so we've definitely progressed into advancing our company in the virtual world now, but we definitely love to get back out there and do live events, and that's over 20 years apiece that we've been doing this. And again, we all wear many hats, I think our main thing is, like, I'm the technical director and try to make sure that we can get everything set up and running efficiently. So I think Heather set me up pretty well. So that's probably my best introduction.
Gotcha. So Mike, tell us what was your first job ever in this industry?
I was a building amp racks and for an audio company in Orlando. And I was doing that part-time and working. Ironically, I went into lighting right after that. So I worked for audio, on-stage audio. I think they're still around. And then I worked for Full Circle Lighting in Atlanta way back in the end of the 90s. And I think that was probably where I started from the very beginning of this, where I think a lot of people should start is in the warehouse and pulling orders and repairing gear. And I even delivered gear to show site. So that was my first, probably, you know, officially the working in an onstage audio, building amp racks and putting up and pulling orders.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's where folks should start. I kind of did the same thing. I'm not sure we ever went over that in my interview, but I will admit that I drove trucks and swept the floors and all of that, got the coffee and all of that for sure. Absolutely where people should start. I agree. How about you, Heather?
Oh, well, I got my first taste of live event industry as a ballerina. I was I danced for 22 years. I was kind of with Princeton Youth Ballet. So I had the live theater in my blood, basically, and then went to college for graphic design. And when I graduated, went the total opposite direction of live events. I went into the ad agency world for years and kind of decided that it was one of those moments where the ad agency wasn't for me and I missed the theater. So kind of went back into it with working with a production company in Washington, D.C. for many years, O'Keefe Communications. And I was their graphics person. I came in as a graphic designer and worked my way up that way. So I didn't pull gear and I didn't drive trucks and I didn't push cases. So maybe I need to go back and do that. Wait, no, we do that now.
No, but that experience is more bottom up from working inside the theater. And also, you know, you still probably worked your way from the bottom up when you got your first job as a graphics person coming out of school. So that is still bottom up. It's just a different bottom up.
Yeah, it just wasn't case pushing.
Right. Exactly. So you actually went to school for graphic design. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the best place for graphic designers. I think people that start to learn that organically don't have the same advantage as the formal education. That's my point of view. I'm not very educated myself in that subject. So Heather, have you ever experienced people that, you know, have a proficiency one way or the other because they've learned organic? Have you ever run into folks like that?
So yeah, some of the designers that we use now have learned organically and don't have the same degree or training, and they learned throughout just their experiences in life. I tend to agree with you that I feel like a formal training does help. We find that people who do have the formal training and the degree have a better eye. And design kind of, for me, design is natural. Like either you have it or you don't. There's no forced part of it. Like you can't teach someone how to see something creatively, whereas you can teach someone how to use a board. You can teach someone how to wrap cable. You can teach someone how to like build a stage and do that kind of stuff. But to think creatively, like I think either you have it or you don't. And the foundation of an education, I think, helps cultivate that and grow it in a way that you can learn the tools a lot better and then kind of nurture your creativity. Whereas like if you're learning it organically, it's great, but I think you're missing some of the key ingredients that you need. Now, I'm not saying that you're not a great designer by any means or anything if you didn't have the formal education. I just feel like it gives you a little bit more of that foundation that you can pick things up a little bit quicker. But there are some phenomenal designers that we work with that don't have that formal background.
Well, thank you for that. I would actually like to talk to more graphic designers. I have a few of them in mind, and I'm sure if they're listening, they know who they are.
We would love to hear from them too. So I'm just putting that out there. We're always looking for great designers.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to start reaching out to some of them, see if we can get some of them on our list.
Absolutely.
I know they're definitely on my radar. And we do want to explore all the different avenues of our industry. When I first started this, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like, I've got a long list of different people I can tap into. And then once you start actually doing it, you're like, yeah, it's going to take some time to get through this list.
It will. So, yeah.
So, you know, if you're one of the 600 people in my contact list, just know that we're working on it. So how about you, Mike? Did you go to school for this or did you learn organically? Tell us about your views here.
I was in the grocery industry in a warehouse. And I decided that I've always loved live music and live productions. So I heard about this school called Full Sail, which was kind of in a basement at the time in a warehouse. I mean, it was a very small operation in a school, but I wanted to like learn the terminology. So like Heather said, it gave me a good foundation. It's like anything. People think you go there and you come out as a massive recording engineer or live touring manager. Yeah. But I used it as a way to like what is the terminology, and how, you know, what is it made of when you, you know, when you do a production? And so we learned a lot of that, and I took that. And again, after that, I went into pulling gear, driving trucks, and, right. and I think in stump, you know, started as a humble position because I knew I needed to learn. And I think that's what I encouraged anyone now is you have to learn. And I beg to differ with Heather. She does pull gear now. She's like,
I went reverse.
Because she does pull gear, push cases, unloads van, our van and everything else now. So, but I think for me, that was really a foundation, learning how to repair moving lights, learning how to repair cables, and just gave me a good foundation. So, but yes, I did go to school for it. But again, it's real world education is what they called it. It really was, because we learned to, you know, to interact with people in this industry and how to work a live show.
Yep. So I agree with you, Mike. I went to the Art Institute in Philadelphia, and it's very similar to Full Sail in that we had a lot of people that went into those programs thinking that this is my shot to the top. I'm going to come out of here and I'm going to skyrocket and I'm going to be number one at that studio over there or at that venue over there. And it doesn't work that way. So I think people need to manage their expectations when they go to those schools. Once you get those foundations that they're giving you, you need to then go out to the real world and get them applied and learn more. That's where your organic learning starts. So, and Heather hit on a very good point in that if you don't go to school, it's not that you can't learn this industry, but as you're learning organically without a foundation, you may be missing some fundamentals that you need to then pick up in some other way as you go along. So neither is right or wrong. It's about what's fit for what person and where you want to go with your career.
Absolutely.
So great answers from both of you. And as far as Heather pushing cases, I mean, this is for the love of her business. So of course that, you know, something goes out the back of your mind. You don't remember that. This is for the love of your business here.
Ray, I believe one time it was in high heels. I didn't get pictures, but I think I.
Oh, yeah, it was. I typically wear the high heels, so I don't have to push the cases. So
I would say, that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, I wonder.
Yeah. It was a type of last minute ditch effort. And I think the high heels ended up on top of the road case as I was pushing it out.
You know, that reminds me of one time where I was at a actual opening that was a big gala deal. And I remember being in a ball gown, taking off my high heels to get into a lift to fix something that was up in the air. And I wonder if anybody's got pictures of that, because really sequins from top to bottom, and I'm grabbing up the bottom of my dress and squeezing my ass into a lift.
That's funny.
Yeah. I've had a few moments of that, except I was crawling around on the floor trying to plug things in. And I'm like, this probably isn't the most proper thing to be doing when I'm in a ball gown. Yeah.
Things we do.
Yeah, I know. For fashion, right? For fashion.
I was thinking for behind the scenes.
It's all for fashion, right?
No, all for fashion. So, Mike, did you have any mentors when you were coming up through this industry?
Yeah, there's quite a few. I guess my hero is Eddie Van Halen, rest in peace. But he, his sound engineer was the first guy I worked with, Jim Jakubowski. And so that was really great. And he mentored me to try to get in live events, and I took a wrong turn to corporate. So I don't know what happened, but maybe it was better for the better. I met Heather in the end out of it. So I would think probably some of the fellas early on, Mark Wathen at Full Circle Lighting, crashed, knocked heads together, but we ended up I learned a lot from him as well. So, and it just so many people along the way, I can't even remember them all, but right at this point, but I think not coming into this industry, not thinking I knew everything, really opened the door to more mentorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How about you, Heather? Is there anybody that you feel was a mentor to you along the way?
There were so many. I have mentors that are not in our industry, and mentors who are in the industry. Coming up as a baby designer and knowing that I knew nothing, I have a dear friend of mine who is now a very dear friend. He was the president of AIGA Baltimore chapter, and I came to DC doe-eyed, not knowing what I was doing or where I was going, and met him at a networking event, and he kind of took me under his wing. And the best piece of advice he always gave me was, look at the now, but look ahead, because the now you need to complete, but when you're looking ahead, you need to also be prepared for what's coming up the future pipeline. And this was when I was a freelancer for the first time, and he was like, you just get your projects done, but you also have to be prepared and think forward with everything as well. And it was just great. And but in the industry, when I worked for O'Keefe, I had an art director, Sarah Moore, who was just, I love her dearly. I mean, I don't think I would even be where I am now in this industry if it wasn't for her. So yeah, I mean, like Mike said, there were so many along the lines, and it's more or less about collaboration and being open to new ideas and new thought processes and talking to our colleagues, because like, right, you know, we don't work the same way. You might do something one way and I might do something the other way, but talking, we might come up with like that third way of doing it that then becomes so much better and more proficient. So, yeah. I mean, Mike and I have always felt like our industry in general is such a big collaborative industry. Yes, we're all competitive. That's part of our nature. We're adrenaline junkies. Like, you have to be in this industry. But the family feel that's part of this industry, that feeling that I could pick up the call phone any day, regardless if I'm hiring you for a project or not, and say, right, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Like, how do I get over this into that next point? I feel like we've just created such a great community as an industry that we could do that. Anybody, like I said to Mike, anybody can call us at any point. We're happy to sit down and talk about those moments on how to become better as in our industry, as a company, as a person. Like, I feel like that's what makes it so much better. So mentors, yes, tons of them over the years. So many that I can't even count, but also friends and family. It's just, that's what I love about our industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what drove us into this.
I'm sure I'm going to kick myself for not thinking of ever other people, but,
of course.
I think our work ethics, like it came from our parents, and certainly, want to thank them too.
Got to get mom and dad in there.
More cookies, so I'm gonna show.
I think I talked about my mother in one of our episodes somewhere along the line. I'm sure I did.
Mom, talk about you. Yeah.
So tell me about Elite Production Services. Tell us. Let me back up from that. Let's go into the husband wife thing here. How did you two meet?
On a show that neither one of us wanted to be on or do, in San Antonio. It was actually, the irony of it is the day before the event, I still didn't know what my role was going into it. And I called the, account executive on it and said, do you really need me on this show? 'Cause I'm okay with not boarding the plane tomorrow and coming down.
Oh, I've had those moments.
Yeah. And he's like, no, it's all hands on ship. Like, I just haven't figured out what position you're in because you have so many different things that you can do for us. And I know, we walked into this big conference room. It's kind of funny. And Mike thought I was the client. But I'll let him tell the rest of the story because I actually threw money at him. So some might say that I might have bought him off.
Okay.
It was
change. Was she asking you to dance? Oh, she was throwing change at you. But maybe there was some malicious intent there. I don't know.
Yeah.
It wasn't even bills. Come on. Yeah. I want to preface
you,
that.
That just makes you a cheap date.
Pretty much, yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Go ahead, Mike.
I want to preface it with I didn't hire her, nor was she on my payroll. So, because the first thing people ask me goes, dude, you hired people that you want to date? And I'm like, no.
We didn't even know each other. Like, didn't even know. It was one of those things where we were each hired separately.
Right.
Well, I think, like Heather said, I mean, I was remembering about a week. It was about a week out from that event that it was touch and go whether it was going to even happen. Mm-hmm. So that's the real truth, is that we almost dropped. I was working for a big box company, and the client didn't want to pay the rates and all that stuff, and so it almost fell through, literally on my side as well. And but it worked out, so I think we're here now, right? So
all right, Mike, so how did you two start the Elite Production Services? Was this just a natural thing because the two of you were together? I mean, did you immediately meet, fall in love, get married, dump your jobs and start a company? That's really probably not what happened. So take us through the story of creating this company.
That's the fairy tale of it, right? We met, fell madly in love, got married, quit our jobs, and drove off into the sunset like Thelma and Louise style or Bonnie and Clyde style, whatever you want to say.
That was the Hollywood version. Yeah.
Right.
What was the question again?
Well, how did you start your Elite Production Services? What
was I will say that I was dabbling with the idea for years. I've always worked full time for companies. I wanted to do things differently, which is the American way, do things better and just keep striving for a better way to do things. So when I met Heather, she was the perfect piece to the puzzle in my plan to start. I honestly, when we decided to be a couple, I was thinking of the idea of how can we work together, and that's how it all started. So because we always met in different cities, like that really sounds bad, but we where are you going to be next week? Oh, I'm going to be in Dallas. And right. I'll fly there and meet you. So it was one of those things where we just didn't want to live our life that way. Right. And to be successful as a couple in our personal life, I wanted to find a way to work together. So we decided to start our company, and I already had the DBA as Elite Production Services, and just dabbling around in the idea, just, at least bought the name and everything. And so Heather had her own company, very successful graphics company, of course. And
yeah.
I'm like, would you be willing to drop your company? And we just have one company. And I know that was her baby, and it was hard to do. And I think now though, we look back that it was a very smart move for us to unite and really made this a production company that is what we wanted to do. And there's stressful times, of course, but it's every day I come into the studio, it's our studio. Every day she works on her computer, it's her EPS computer. So it's a lot of learning, a lot of stressful times, but it's our stressful times. It's our company, and we report to one another, and we hold each other in real high accountability. So.
Yeah. He wasn't kidding. I did go tooth and nail getting rid of my baby and coming in and creating a whole new company. I was like, I did say to him, I was like, look, like I went through this several times because I had several companies over the years. And I said, I don't know if I want to do this. Is that the smartest thing? Do we take my company and convert it into something else and kind of change the branding and the messaging behind it? Or do we start something completely new? And for a little bit there, kind of to piggyback on what Mike said, we did kind of try and make my company work as the production company, but a lot of people just associated it with graphics work and not with a production, like everything else, with the technical direction and consulting and all the other parts and pieces that go along with this. So we got kind of pigeonholed for a little bit. And so that was when me tooth and nail, dragging my feet, said, yeah, I think it's time we need to make this switch and transition. And so it's been great. I mean, it's a lot of people, the biggest question we get, how's it to work with your spouse?
Yes, that was my next one. So go for it.
I have to say, like Mike said earlier, we work really well with one another. We balance each other out. And I guess you can kind of say we had a trial run with it before we started dating, with working on a show together. And we realized we did work really well together on that show. Balancing each other out, kind of picking up the pieces where the other person was not as strong. And it just, that kind of flowed into this. And yeah, do we fight? We do. I mean, every couple has their moments. But I can't say that I wouldn't want to ever work with him. Like, it's just been such a pleasure, and it makes it so much fun to get up every day and know that this is something that we built together. And I know a lot of husband and wives that are teams probably say the same thing I'm about to say, but it's really hard for that work-life balance. Like, when do you turn work off and when do you turn personal life on? Like, we find even more, like, we'll go out to dinner, and instead of just enjoying dinner and talking, we end up talking shop the whole time. But that's also part of the passion that we have for the industry and what we do. So
I can totally see that. Mm-hmm. I can totally see that, because we've done that as friends too sometimes.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely.
You walk out the door and you start a personal conversation, catch up on the kids and the da da da, and you know, how's the family, blah blah blah. And next thing you know, the conversation turns to work, and sometimes one of us will go, "Hey, wait a minute, what are we doing? You know, let's stop. You know, we could talk shop when we get back to the site." You know.
Yeah.
But it definitely happens. It definitely happens, and I can imagine that's a struggle, because it's the, "Oh, hon, I just got an update. I just got an email." And you're standing in the kitchen trying to cook dinner, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess you do have to find the time to turn that off and say, no, not right now.
Yeah, and it's been, especially, and I'm sure a lot of people in our industry can relate to this right now, when the work comes in now, you take it. And there's no turnoff button for it right now. So it's been even harder. I mean, we're still in all technicality, we're still in the infancy of our company. So there's a lot of that constant building and marketing and restructuring and figuring out what works and doesn't work. And I think we have a couple more years of the internal side of that, because I know when I've built my other companies, it takes a good 5 to 8 years to get to where you are, this well-oiled machine. Now, we're a well-oiled machine working together and being on site and all that. It's just the inner processes. And it's like, the other day, Mike's like, "Oh, I was looking at our website. Maybe we should do X, Y, and Z." And this was over dinner. And I'm like, "Can we just enjoy our dinner?" And we have to remind each other to turn off. That's the big part. But we love what we do, and we have such a passion for it that I think that just like flows into our everyday. Perfect example, we were traveling internationally a couple years ago, and we're like, "We're going to shut off. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to answer email." It's like, we're international in this B&B, and I'm like, "The Wi-Fi is not working and I can't get my email." And he's like, you're supposed to be turned off. Like, you're not supposed to be doing this. I'm like, "Yeah, but I need to check. I just want to be sure."
Yeah, it is very hard in our industry, and there's a lot of folks out there that wouldn't understand that, in that there are definitely times, like, if we want to unplug, like you're talking about going international, you actually have to warn all your clients, I'm out for a week. I'm done, cut off, not gonna respond to you." And even at that, there's going to be somebody who goes, "Yeah, but you know, I'm more special than that. And you need to look out for my emails, because if I need you, I need you." And what do you say to the person that's writing your check? You know, this is your customer. This is not your boss. Your client is your customer. So it's very different and difficult to find those little things. How about you, Mike? Do you have trouble turning off? How do you view this?
Absolutely. I do. And I think watching documentaries or binge watching a show on our day off is a way to turn off from work.
Even then you don't turn off because he's like, look, did you see how that camera pan is? We can incorporate that into the next shoot that we do. Or he'll call me over and go, look at those graphics. Do you see how they're building? Yeah, I do the same thing.
I did lie. Heather just called me out on it.
I did.
I was watching a documentary about sharks the other day, and I'm like, oh, look, I really like those graphics. Look at that. And I called Heather over. So she's right. I did do that and don't even think about it. But I do have a, I guess that explains why I do have a hard time turning off the industry and how, especially our own company. I feel like if we take time off, we get behind. Mm-hmm. And so that is a balance we're trying to work on. And,
but it's also expected. It's become the norm. I can't think back to any time in my 30 years when it wasn't the norm. You know, even before cell phones, et cetera, it was, you know, people expected you to return their call once you got that message on the answering machine. And so, you know, they're looking at their stuff going, oh, she should probably be home now. She's probably getting my message about now.
And it's only heightened since technology. Yeah, it's
exactly. It's only gotten worse. Yeah.
My biggest curse is Wi-Fi on airplanes. I used to love getting on a plane, opening a book, and shutting down for the 2 to 6 hours that you're on the flight.
Yeah. And
now you can't. Now, because everybody knows that there's Wi-Fi, there's that expectation that you continue to work. And I actually said to a client a couple months ago, because we actually traveled a little bit during this COVID thing, I said to them, look, I'm human too. I do need that recharge moment. I need to eat. I need to fuel my body. Like, so I am shutting down. I understand that this is a priority for you. It's a priority for me too, but my priority right now is taking care of me so I can take care of you. And it was hard because Mike will attest, we both do it. We get on the plane, we're like, oh, I got to get on Wi-Fi. And then like, you're there, and I always call it Muppet type, because you're not getting on the Wi-Fi properly. So you're like, why isn't this working? So, yeah.
I agree.
Go ahead.
At least we don't have the Nextel, Ray, you know, with beep, beep, you know, with the Windows.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
Yeah, those were horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. Pagers came before that, right? You got a page and you're like, thank goodness I don't have one of those bag phones in my cars. You have to wait till I get back to my office, or a pay phone, for heaven's sake. Yeah, it's super gross to think of now, especially in COVID.
I was germaphobe before that. So
Me too.
The headsets, the comms that you would get on show site, I'd be like, where's my, like, literally wiping them down, dipping them in Lysol. Like, I don't want to smell or touch your nasty headset that I got to put on.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about the airplane Wi-Fi. And originally, it might have been more difficult to get the Wi-Fi. They didn't always work. And that still happens sometimes now. So at this point now, when the Wi-Fi doesn't work, I'm like, well, me time. And I found myself getting mad one time, and I'm like, wait, why am I mad? I can go back to the old me and just read things on my phone. I'm mad because I don't have a book. But let me tell you my trick to the whole expecting you to work on the plane thing. My trick became that I rearranged things. I took me time and planned work on the plane. It was probably for the next show, or probably just some cleanup work for my paperwork as far as the show went. But I planned to work on the plane and then took the time for myself, you know, outside of the plane. So anybody who, you know, might want to take that route, knowing that you're expected to work on the plane. And that's probably what pissed me off about not being able to get Wi-Fi at that point. It's like, I need to do this now. because I planned, I planned to do this and I don't want to have to do it when I get there.
Yeah. No, I get it. I think that's a great tip.
It, you know, sometimes it was always difficult to work on planes too, depending on the size of your laptop, right? You have the Tyrannosaurus Rex arms going.
Yeah, it's funny because Mike is 6'4", and it's like getting in. Sometimes you'd be on a plane, so of course, like, he'd be like, "Do you mind sitting in the middle?" And it's very rare that he asks me to sit in the middle, so I know that he has stuff to do. And then of course I'm stuck between him and like typically some like large dude on the other side. And I'm like, "Okay, I guess I'm not working right now." And he's like, "I need to type, and can you move over a little bit?" And I'm like, "There's nowhere to move." So that part of travel I don't miss.
Right. All right, so we started to touch a little bit on the pandemic, and I don't want to run out of time on you because I do want to talk about some of the philanthropical things that you've been involved in, some of the advocacies that you've been involved in, because I think what you're doing to help others has been such an inspiration. So I do want to talk about that too. But how were you affected by the pandemic? What has happened with Elite Production Services since then?
Mike, I'll let you take that.
Yeah, well, we started out 2019 really feeling good about the year. We had pretty packed January, February. Going into March, we were in LA when we started getting more and more news of what was happening, and you start seeing talks about things that seemed unheard of in our country about shutdowns and pandemics just in our lifetime. It just didn't seem real. So we just kind of kept an eye on it. We came home and just our entire book of business for 2020 went away within probably 2 weeks. So I think we look back on it, what we like to say, we were in the fetal position, just didn't know what to do. And being a new company, luckily we had low overhead, so we were able to consolidate and survive. And then Heather's favorite word, pivot to the virtual world. But there's a little backstory to that because we fought it for the first couple months. And we're like, we're not a virtual company. Even though we've done it for years, it just was an afterthought on a live event that we would send a stream out to wherever, but we figured nobody was really watching, or it just wasn't a priority like the in-person event. So
yeah, I'd like to throw in a little tidbit there though too, because we actually were ahead of it in some regards, because when we got married, we live streamed our wedding to our family who couldn't join us. So the irony is we did a lot of the groundwork and the legwork and figured all that part out, because we were like, we typically turnkeyed that. That was not something,
we turnkeyed it because, you know, those people did it all the time.
Yeah.
We would send them left and right and a video and let them do their thing. I think we never thought, obviously, that we'd be a full virtual company. So we spent the rest of the year just really being able to pay the bills, but really kind of wondering what the future holds. And I'm sure we're not alone with that, but I think we just embraced it, and we have a studio that we're able to broadcast from with, multiple cameras and things like that. And so it was a bit fortuitous that we went ahead and proceeded with the studio, because that was an expense that we didn't know we should take on.
Right.
So Heather, if I miss anything, jump in. But I think it was really just doing just that 180.
Yeah.
That again, we fought it for 2 months. Like,
well, and I can imagine, Mike, you probably had some of the same things going on that I had, as you know, the TD mind of, there is no platform out there that is a one size fits all for clients. So you start to go, where do I begin? And now do I need to know all 10 different, 15 different platforms and what they can do so that I can effectively sell? That's like this huge rabbit hole that I'm sure many of us out there started to go down. And as we're trying to figure out how we're going to make this work for our clients. So, I totally hear you. I'm sure there's more people out there that could say the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, we did go down that rabbit hole too in the beginning, where you start going, oh my God, where do we go? What do we do? How do we do this? Like, do we partner with someone? We tried a couple of those shoes on, I'm sure like everybody else in the industry did. Mm-hmm. And we found that for us, nothing was working the way we wanted it to. Yeah. And it was a combination of things. It was turning the client's mindset that you can't physically take what you were doing live and put it virtually. There needs to be some shifts in thoughts. There needs to be some shifts in behaviors. There needs to be some shifts in how everything is produced and put together and how you're presenting and interacting with your audience. Like, you can't do a networking event for 500 people on a Zoom call. Like, just doesn't work like it would in the lobby of the ballroom.
Right.
So it was those mindsets that like had to shift. And we're still teaching clients that, because I think a lot of clients now are starting to shake off that fog of 2020, because everyone kept pushing their dates back. Everybody kept going, well, we'll wait until the fall to see if we can do a hybrid event. Well, we'll wait until the spring to see if we can do a hybrid event. And I think now people are realizing, we can't do hybrid right now.
Right.
We have to stay in the virtual world. And a lot of them have to have, by the bylaws of their board or whatever it is, some of these meetings. So now what does that look like? But for us, it was, we decided to develop our own portal because we weren't getting what we wanted out of a lot of these platforms. Now, I'm not saying they're not worth it, like, the time, the energy, whatever it is, it just wasn't working for our clients at the time.
Right.
And we've used them all and we still use them because there's some, I think every platform has its need, but there was just something that we were missing. So we developed our own and we've been using it since May of 2020 and have been fine tuning it and adjusting it and making it fit. And there's some things that ours just doesn't do that other ones do better, and we're just not going to spend the time and investment into it to make that happen just because we don't feel that our client base it works for. But then there are other things that our platform works 10 times better for our clients, and it meets all their needs and everything that they need. So for us, it was that horrible word of pivot, and
yeah,
we did what we had to do. Bless you.
But everything we've done, I think will transcend back to in-person events, or the popular term is hybrid now, that
Right. We
tried to be strategic about how we look at the next year. And you know, we've had a lot of good partners and people that we've developed relationships with over the years, and contractors and freelancers. But I think it's you know, like Heather said, it's just one of those things that we had to make that jump to survive.
Absolutely. You know, Mike, you touched on something that some of our listeners have been asking to hear about. So now I'm still going to go off topic. You know, what I'm coming down to is that I think at some point we're going to have a second conversation. There's so much that I want to go over with you guys. I can see that we're going to end up running out of time, but people want to know what some opinions are out there of the future of the industry. So, Mike, tell me what you see in the future of our industry.
I think venues are going to rethink how they, specifically event venues, are going to rethink how they host events. I think that's going to be in the foreseeable future. Again, that the hybrid, I think a select amount of people will be in person. I think there's going to be very strict protocols. I wouldn't have said that a few months ago, but I think for 2021 and 2022, you can probably count on a high level of virtual events, a reduction in retail or event space, office buildings, especially if you're in corporate real estate, it's got to be frightening. I think people have learned to work from home, and now it's accepted. A few years ago, it was called telecommuting, and now it's, no, this is what we're doing. So I think companies are relooking, and what that reflects, I mean, how that obviously impacts us is how they have their meetings. Mm-hmm. So I think if you have an industry that is in this kind of situation, you have to look at where we're going. It is not going to be in person to the degree we're used to in the last 5 years. So it's not going to happen. Again, speaking of pivot, I wouldn't have said that a few months ago. I didn't think it would be possible, but then again, just prepare for, I think there's going to be a lot of studio work. I think there's going to be a lot of pre-records happening, where there's small crews and isolated crews and isolated talent. So people can be in their own rooms and you know, the 6 feet away and all this stuff is not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah.
How about you, Heather?
I agree. I mean, it's heartbreaking to see what our industry is going through and know how many people who are so talented and so amazing at what they do just aren't going to be able to do it right now. Our big thing is, like Mike said, I think we're going to see a very big change in our industry of how we are moving forward. And I think virtual is not going to go away because a lot of our clients have seen the benefit of it opens them up from, yeah, maybe you could have 1500 people at the one venue, but now they're reaching 5,000 people via the virtual scope. So I think even if we are fully in person again in 2022, like I don't see it in 2021. I see hybrid this year and hybrid at a very, like Mike said, very select way of doing it. 2022, yeah, I'm hoping we're back live full in person, but I think there's still going to be that strong virtual presence where they're going to be like, yeah, we're live, but we want to stream the whole thing. We want all the analytics that go with it. We want chat functionality. We want Q&A functionality. We want polling. We want that full interactivity that the at-home guests can get at the same time as our in-person attendees. And we want them to have the same experience. So I don't feel like it's going to be like it went back to live events with the stream where, like Mike said, you let another company turnkey it and they plug it in and whatever. I think there's going to be a true facet to this where they want that full interactivity still remaining in the virtual world as we're still doing in person.
And on the creative side, do you see the design of a show in a hybrid being this strange beast that we haven't seen before? You want to continue to engage a person who is watching virtually, and yet your mindset of the folks in the room is a little different. How do you see combining that creatively?
My mind keeps going back to television, right? So you have you look at the shows like the Oprah Winfrey Show or the Today Show or any of those, you have the live audience atmosphere to it, but you have that at home audience too. And so what does that look like? Does it include AR that your at home audience gets a better, gets a different interactivity? Like, you know, what was it? The Olympics a couple years ago, they had all those AR things that you could see on TV, but you couldn't see as an audience member there for the event. So yeah. Does that where our industry's going, where I think, and we're even seeing it now with a virtual event that I feel like the little bit of broadcast background that we both had, we had to really step that up because it's now broadcast. That's what we're doing. So I think it's going to be this merger of these two worlds, because our event industry is massive when you look at it. And there are people who are television producers and creatives for television and creatives for broadcast who always stayed in their lane. And then the other part of that lane was the live event industry, where we all stayed in our lane as live event people for that in-person, in the moment, the train has left the building kind of thing. We've all stayed in our lanes, but now it just kind of came all together in this merged world where I know, like, producers that I've worked with in live events who have the background in broadcasting, like, we're picking up the phone going, so we want to do this. How does this work? And it's this merger and blend. And I don't think that separation is ever going to go away. I think this is now here to stay.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I wish we had better news, but I think we have to be realistic too.
I don't find that bad news, Mike. Yeah. I don't think that that's bad news necessarily. It does definitely change things for some folks, but if you think of the large scale, so what I'm trying to say is that in a small scale, you won't have as large of a scenic team, lighting team. And so if you're talking about bad news, it's the smaller audio rig. It's that huge production that we're going to have to let go of for a certain, you know, amount of time. And that's just a reality. But I think we already came to that reality in, you know, August or September. That may have really hit home to folks that this is going to be pretty prolonged as far as getting back to this rock and roll corporate, you know, venue that we're used to, many of us are used to. So that just means that they have to think smaller, that some of these hybrids, you may still want to build a set. Let's see if we still want to build a set and light it and all of those things. It's just on a smaller scale. It's in a smaller venue.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a smaller venue. Let's even go that far, because you still might want to social distance these people 2 years from now. Who knows how that part's going to go? But realistically, it's just all scaling down.
Mm-hmm.
It is, in a way. I think there's still, and this is what we've been trying to educate clients, it still takes the same manpower and the same man hours. Now, there might be, we might need, instead of one deck manager, because you had a green room that you could go grab all 15 of your presenters and throw them up on stage, you might now need 10 deck managers.
I was gonna say at least two.
Yeah, because you no longer have them all in one place. They're all coming in different sources. So you need someone to be there to guide them and tell them what to do. And we've all put on multiple hats in this industry. Regardless of what part of this, if you're an audio engineer, if you're a lighting, if you're camera, if you're whatever, like, you've put on another hat in some way, shape, or form.
Sure.
Where on show site, where it's like, hey, we need a few more hands to run cable, or we need help moving furniture, or we need help doing this or whatever. You can't pull all these people together because they're all remote to do multiple jobs. Each person now has to singularly focus on what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it's how many hats can you wear now in this virtual world, and it's not many. Mm-hmm. So, and
in this hybrid situation, you also have two full separate teams, right? You have your full onsite team and your full virtual team. So, and then we need to integrate those. So they're, and Mike, my point being that this is a light at the end of the tunnel for, you know, the scenic designers and the lighting designers and the A1s that want to do their larger work. You do a live event and you've got, you know, four people on the audio team, four people on the lighting team. You do a virtual event, you've got one audio guy and you might have somebody that turned on a light for somebody, but you don't have a lighting designer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what a lot of our lighting designers have come to us and said, that's the last thing people are generally needing. And I said, well, there still has to be good lighting for video when you do. But it, like you said, it's just not the scale yet. as 30, maybe 200 moving lights on a rig, that type of thing.
Yeah. Video production has been huge for us. So that's been the upside for all of this. We've gone from, we produce maybe 5 or 6 videos for a live event to now producing 20 to 30, if not more, videos. I mean, next week alone, we have 78 pre-records that we're doing for another event. So it's just like the scale of video has changed, which I think then for all the lighting designers out there, like start honing your video skills in that regard on how do you light for video versus how do you light for live events. Right. Like audio engineers out there, start honing your skills for video capture audio, because that's something as well. Like, yeah, you need a grip, but you also need someone to make sure that it sounds good. And you can't always rely on your cameraman to sit there and be like, yeah, it sounds good on camera. Like having someone that's actually there monitoring that is huge. So it's those kind of positions. It's like, yeah, we had to pivot as a production company, but each individual person has to make that choice if they're going to make that pivot and start honing their skills in a different way.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. All right. So like I said, we're probably going to have more than one conversation with you guys, but let's take this into the advocacies and charities that you two are involved in, because I'm sure there's more to what you've been working on than even what I know, but that's what caught my attention to you both. And one of the reasons that we started, you know, interacting and connecting again, and for me to say, you know what, we really need you guys on the show. So where did this start? Who started the, all of this? I bet it was Heather.
It's a combination. So as a company, even when I owned my own company, every year I selected a charitable foundation that I got super involved with. We donated time, donated energy, donated money, that sort of thing. And every year as a company that Mike and I were together, we always said at the end of the year, what charity are we getting involved with that we can donate our time, donate our money, do it as a donational gift for our clients, like in your name, we donated X, Y, or Z, or we did so many hours of volunteer work or whatever. The biggest thing that started it all, in all honesty, was we wanted to hone our virtual skills. And Mike was the one who really like kind of pushed this a little bit more. We were approached by a DJ that we worked with at some of the corporate events that we did. And I've known him for 8+ years. And we just kind of, he approached us because he went into his basement one night during quarantine and just decided to turn the camera on Facebook Live and start spinning music. And with that, he that night raised almost $20,000. And he wasn't even doing it for a charity. He just like put a tip jar out, didn't think anything of it. He had over 1 million views. And he stopped himself after that and realized he needed extra production help. At that point, he took all that money and instead of keeping it, turned it around and donated it to a couple local charities here in the Baltimore area. And with that being said, he's like, I'm being approached by all these charities. All these nonprofits, and I need production help. And he's like, you guys are, we've worked so well together in the past. I want to bring you in as my production team for this. And it's funny because Mike and I go, we never thought that we'd be like in the live event industry, DJs are entertainment, right? For the parties, networking, whatever. And we're like, we never thought we'd actually be producing for a DJ. Right. So we started doing all these different charitable events that are local to Maryland and the DC, Baltimore region. And the one that stands out to us the most, that meant the most to us, there were two, and Mike cut me off at any point here. So we started getting involved with Save the Stages, because there's so many great venues, as you know, here in the DC Baltimore area for musicians and artists to come in and play and do their thing. And Mike's big thing was he always wanted to start doing concerts and putting together benefit concerts that we could do for different local charities and stuff like that. Because charity for us has always been the core of who we are. Mm-hmm. So we were approached by Merriweather Post Pavilion, and they're like, hey, we're super involved with Save the Stages, and we really want to do an event. And so the DJ we're working with is DJ Kopeck, and he has such a huge following. Would he be willing to do one of his broadcasts from the stage? And I remember, like, clear as day, I know, it was like amazing. It was that moment where we literally pulled cases off a truck and pushed them onto that stage. And I was like, I literally had tears in my eyes going, we are pushing cases. Like, there is gear being loaded into a building. We're building a set on Merriweather Post Pavilion stage.
Oh, you're getting me.
And it was having that moment, and then seeing Chris walk out on stage and, like, literally say, this is for everybody in our industry. This is for the lighting engineers, the video engineers. This is for everybody to save their jobs, save the venues to come back to. So it chokes me up every time, because I know how many people in our industry are struggling, and to save the venues and save the spaces that we can go back into and do what we love is a huge thing. So for me, it was like the adrenaline after that was, we can do this. We got this. So the more charities that came to us, the more we saw the differences that we were making. And I'll let Mike kind of finish it off with, like, our big kind of end of the year thing that we did, which I'm so proud of the feat that he did with this. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, I think it was like we were approached by working with DJ Kopeck, but we were approached by more 501c3 companies who they suffered because how they made their money was in-person events, how they made their fundraising goals, sure. And how they met their year-end fundraising and all that vanished. So how do they go forward? So a lot of them came to us, and like Heather said, it was also a way for us to hone our skills and try different things. And we were able to raise lots of money with them by doing this. So it felt good. And we've always had we're compassionate giving people. So we were thankful for being able to work. And if we can help out charities, then we did. And right. So it culminated with the Stuff to Train toy drive in December, mm-hmm. at the B&O Railway Museum in Baltimore. And I think that's where DJ Kopeck was kind of the year-end icing on the cake, because they raised over 25,000 toys.
29. Our last count was 20, almost 30,000 toys. We were short by, I think, like 100 toys.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
So
fabulous.
Yeah, I think it was just giving back, and it felt good. A lot of these events we did for no cost, and, you know, but it was also, we were able to bring people in the industry to help us. And we felt good about being able to provide some work for people and to,
yeah.
Hey, you know, all hope isn't lost. And we, you know, several people at the train museum even said, wow, I haven't seen cases rolling in here in, you know, all year. So road cases. So like yeah. Heather said, it makes you take stock of everything. So I don't know. We've always been charitable, but this year it escalated because they had no outlet. Mm-hmm. They had no outlet to raise money.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we stepped in with DJ Kopeck's getting us really started and mm-hmm. working with him. And we did some events without him, but because of him, and sort of got us going.
Yeah. I think you're a perfect example of how people can help charities by giving their skills and their time. And it may be something that some of our listeners may have not thought of in the past, but certainly with the way things are right now, and typically our industry, for most of us, we we tend to get away from the December events that are Christmassy. But to then take that time that you've chosen to have off and donate your skills to a charity, I think is really the point that I wanted to make to our listeners. And I want to thank you both so much for what you do in your community, because yeah, Heather, this is something that has always stuck in my mind about you, is that you would talk about your end of the year charities.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because I kept thinking, especially going back to the Meriwether one, us as an industry are the ones that always pull together to put on the charitable events.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments where I went, this is for us.
Yep, yeah. This is for us. That's awesome. And yeah, Save Our Stages. What a worthy cause, because we still need to help the people in these different advocacies like Extend PUA. But without saving the venues, we've got nothing to go back to, or limited places to go back to, because when you start losing the venues, you're going to lose all the small ones first, or all the ones that might have been on the edge to start with. And that would just be a shame for many, many places. And if you're one of our listeners out there, if you're able to just think and look around your own community at what the small venues are, and then think to yourself that these are probably the places that you're going to be working in when we do come back. What's the state of those places? Are they going to make it? Are they still around at this point? Are they able to get a grant from the newest relief package? Do they know that there's a grant available from the newest relief package? There's some people out there that, believe it or not, are not paying attention because the stress, and they've unplugged. And that's the God's honest truth. Perhaps people out there just don't know what's going on in the advocacies because they needed to unplug. They needed to get away from it for a little bit, clear their minds and what have you.
But you can't blame them.
No, that's absolutely normal, right? No, you can't blame them at all. But if there was ever a time to start getting the word out, I think now would be it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know for us, we've created a great relationship with everybody at Meriwether, and we check in with them, and it's been great. It's that event launched a big thing for them where they realized that they could do things virtually from there. So it kind of pivoted their way of thinking. So going back to what you said, Ray, this might help. I mean, going into the local communities, just sitting there and going, how can we help? Maybe we can just help do a virtual event, or help them stream a previous event that they've done before to help raise money. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to, a lot of it is raise money, because a lot of these venues are back to skeleton staff, and the skeleton staff is literally a person that comes in, turns the lights on, make sure everything works, turns the lights off, and walks out. Yeah. So
that's pretty much what we saw. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, but now Meriwether, they did this big thing on New Year's Eve, which was pretty phenomenal. They did a fireworks show 3 times, and DJ Kopech went out and streamed to Facebook. We didn't help him with that because we were setting up for a virtual stream for a New Year's Eve event for him later that evening. So we kind of divided and conquered, but he was back on the stage, and he said it was so surreal to be there again and know that the venue probably would have been filled up with thousands of people. And there's just, it's weird being on a stage, and we can all attest to this, when you know there's never going to be an audience there. Like, being on a stage and seeing the audience and feeling the energy and knowing that your presenters are getting that back and your performers are getting that back, but then to be on that stage and not have that energy was one of the most bizarre, surreal experiences ever.
Yeah, I think to my humble moment was to see all the pollen on the seats. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was like a half inch of pollen, it seemed like, on all this. So you can tell it had been used.
I can picture this. Yeah.
So that was a really like surreal moment that wasn't being used.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause we were at the peak of concert season. Like, mm-hmm. Literally the weekend that we loaded our truck in there, they were like, yeah, we were supposed to load in, what was it, like Luke Bryan or something like that, for his like 2-day concert tour that was actually taking place there at Meriwether. they were supposed to sell out like 8,000 seats or whatever it was, plus the lawn, plus this. And they were just like, it's so, it, like you could hear a pin drop standing on that stage. It was so weird.
It must feel like sound check over and over and over.
Yeah.
It really did.
Well, and feeling like sound check over and over is one thing, but when Mike said the pollen on the seats, that was like, so wow, that changes your view of that, of how you imagine the feeling, because it then becomes apocalyptic. And there's no other way for me to describe that.
That was a, you just look out there and you go, wow, the pollen, it's almost like you can see tumbleweed blown by almost, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. But thanks for having us on this, Ray. We really appreciate it. It forces us to reflect back on the year that it was.
Yeah.
So,
which can be hard. It can be hard. But one of the things that I want to make sure we're still able to obtain in our industry is that camaraderie and the idea that you're not alone. You know, you may be sitting out there and doing your virtual stuff and be involved, or maybe you weren't able to be involved because you're one of the 70% versus 30%, whatever, wherever you are in this, you're not alone, right? So thank you both for being here. This has been my pleasure, honestly. It's been a great conversation. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners before we wrap this up?
Oh, I'm just, we're excited, right? It was so great to see you, actually see you and not.
I know, right?
And hopefully we're all back out there soon. I mean,
yeah,
we're just really hoping for it. I mean, I love our industry. I love what we're doing. I love everything about the world that we built, and just to be back out there and see our friends again and hug one another. And, you know, we always called it our show family, and we can't wait until we see him again.
And if you're looking for it, don't hesitate to call us, because we are trying to grow, and that's a way to network. And, you know,
absolutely,
please reach out to us. And we're surviving and hopefully thriving. We'll continue to thrive and be able to come into a studio and work.
Yeah. No.
We'll make sure that we link your website in our description so folks can reach out. If no other way, through your website. And I think we do need to have another conversation, because as you talk about your platform, your portal, I think we need to know more about that. And I know that you folks have another meeting you have to get to, so I'm really going to wrap this up and let you jump. So good luck in everything, and thank you for being here. We're going to talk again soon, and have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you. It was great seeing you.
Great to see you too.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us
on Feed the Crew.